Good evening, family. You can open your workbooks if you want to page 24 if you've got one. That's where we're going to be tonight. Ten Commandments. We have been through four of them. Anybody remember the first one? You got it. That's number one. What's the second one? That's right. Don't be idle. Right? It's longer than what you said, but what's the third one? Got it. And the fourth one? Okay. We have seen all these so far with a kind of a vertical focus, right? These are all about relating to God. And tonight's commandment marks a shift, but it's not really a radical shift. I think all these commandments about how we relate to God and how we revere Him as holy, to understand the vertical and to get the vertical right will help us get the horizontal right. Correct? And so God begins horizontally with family relationships. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives to you. Now we're gonna see how Moses again in Deuteronomy chapter 5 repeats all these commandments, and in a couple of them he does something a little different with them. And he does that with this one in Deuteronomy 5. We're not going to be there just yet, but we will be there in just a second. But you can see the shift in these when you write them all down or you look at them in your Bible or whatever. You can see how the first four have got this vertical focus towards God, and then the others are more horizontal, how we relate to one another. And again, I think God did that on purpose. You know, the horizontal, how we relate across the board to not just families, but also to neighbors and others around us, stems from our vertical relationship to God. If we've got things right with Him, then every other relationship will be better. We'll have a better understanding about how those relationships ought to be. Now, the Israelite, their social structure was very family oriented. It was a patriarchal society. Anybody know what that means? Yeah. Basically, the patriarch of the family, the head man, whoever that may be, maybe dad or grandfather or maybe someone else, even a dead ancestor would be the one who dictated the way the family should go. And I think we still see some of that in the way that God intends for families to be structured even today. Dad has the responsibility, right, of making sure that the family is not only provided for financially and physically, but also spiritually, right? God has made the man the head of the house. And when there's a vacuum there, usually mom will step in to fill that void, but that's not been God's intention. God has intended that man will understand his responsibility to lead his family. And I think in the way that the Israelite society was, you definitely see that in that patriarchal setup that they had. There's something interesting that goes on here in Exodus 20 verse 12. It says, honor your father and your mother that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. There's a couple of interesting things. First of all is the word for honor. There are a couple of Hebrew words, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar, you know that, but there are a couple of Hebrew words that are translated honor in the Old Testament, and this particular one is not only translated honor, but also glory. And you see that later on in chapter 24. Just run over there real quick. Exodus chapter 24. In verse 16, it says, the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai. That word glory there is the same exact word that's translated honor here. So it tells us something about what God is wanting us to do. Give glory to your father and your mother. Honor them. I don't think that it's a stretch to see that to give glory to your parents is to honor them. That you want to make sure that they have the respect and the reverence that's due the position that God has placed them in. And part of that is, I think, recognizing that there is a hierarchical structure to the family. And we're gonna talk about that in just a moment. God intended for father to lead, for mother to be his partner in that leadership as she submits to him. But together, they lead their children. There's a definite sense here that God is imparting to children the need to recognize where they stand. They're not the boss in the house. And you and I have all seen in modern times what happens when a kid rules the house. Right now there's all this hullabaloo that's going on about letting children choose their gender and stuff like that. Well, now when I was 10 years old, I couldn't even choose if I wanted a hot dog or a peanut butter sandwich for lunch. You know, I couldn't, you know, much less my gender. I couldn't do that. I didn't have the proper mature thinking for that, right? Well, that's why God says here, honor your father and your mother. They're the ones who have the authority over you. And he even gives a reason so that your days in the land will be prolonged. Now, I've been doing some reading in the Old Testament in my daily Bible reading, and I just read, in fact, today, Leviticus 26. We're not going to turn there, but Leviticus 26 is a lot like Deuteronomy chapter 28. And if you get a chance, compare those two chapters sometime. They are chapters where God says, look, if you do what I say, if you obey my commandments, then the whole land is open to you. I will bless your socks off. God doesn't say that, but that's what he means. He says, I will bless you. Things will go very well for you if you just obey my commandments. But if you don't, then I'm booting you out of there. And of course, we know this, the history of Israel, right? How patient God was and how long and he forbore, is that the right tense? How long he put up with them in their rebelliousness and their obstinate, stubborn way of just shaking a fist at them. God put up with that for a long time, but finally God was true to the promise he made and he booted them out of the land. I believe that when God says, honor your father and your mother so that your days in the land will be prolonged, that if they could just get the idea of authority right, then certainly everything else would fall into place and they would enjoy that long prosperity in the land that God had given to them. Now, I told you before that Moses repeats all these commandments over in Deuteronomy chapter 5, and he does it a little different with this commandment over in Deuteronomy 5 and in verse 16. He says, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be prolonged and that it may go well with you on the land which the Lord your God has given you. This is the way that Paul refers to it over in Ephesians 6. Let's head over there real quick. In Ephesians 6, and let's read verses 1 and 2. Who's got that? Okay. So, let me just ask you, what do you think God intends here when he says that it may go well with you? Okay. And if God is pleased with you, well, you pretty much got things in the bag. Not that everything is going to be perfect, but pleasing God is job one, right? And that's what he affirms that over and over and over and over and over again in these books that Moses wrote concerning their wilderness wandering. Please God, that's the first thing. Jen? I think we can take that in a couple of different ways. And we're going to look at one of those ways in just a little bit. So I'll save that till we get there. But one of those ways, I think, is just simply that God is saying, look, the better you are at obeying, the better you are at understanding authority, the longer you're going to stay in the land, right? God kept telling them in these commandments that when you disobey me, I'm going to kick you out. You're not going to live long in the land. So I think that part of what Moses is saying here, or God through Moses, is that not only they will be able to live their lives long in the land, but then the next generation will, the generation after that, the generation after that, they'll prolong their days as a nation. They'll live long on the land. Does that make sense? Okay. And that was the other thing. And we're going to get to that in a minute. No, it's okay. You know, but it's not just the generational thing. It's also you and your lifetime. It's what Jason said. If you disobey, God had some pretty strict consequences for people who broke his rules. And, definitely death was one of them. So they had these opportunities and consequences, right? They had the opportunity to live long on the land, to let it go well with them, but there were also consequences to their disobedience, and that's what Jason was talking about. In fact, head over with me to, if you're in Exodus 20, 22, around there, let's look at Exodus 21. Exodus 21. In Exodus 21 and verse 15, maybe this is what Jason was alluding to. Moses says, "He who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." Verse 17 says, "He who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." There's only one way to take that, right? God is serious about this honor your mother and father thing. And if you don't, if you get it wrong, then it definitely won't go well with you. And Moses goes even further and gets the community involved. Look at Deuteronomy 21, Deuteronomy 21. This is actually, I think, what Jason might have been referring to. Deuteronomy 21. Let's read verses 18 through 21. Jason, would you read those? All I can say is that sometimes my daughters were lucky we didn't live in these times. But think about it. How at the end of your rope do you have to be with your child to go this route? To know that the only thing left for your child is to be brought before people who will pronounce judgment and sentence on him or her. I mean, I can't think of anything that would break a parent's heart more, you know, knowing what the end might be. But again, it gives us a really good idea of just how serious God is. If you're in your workbook, look over at page 26 for a second. Look at that second paragraph down that says, "The commandment held honor as a principle that established respect for roles in the family." Let me ask you something. Are there still roles that God expects different persons in the household to occupy? Sure there are, right? Now, we don't drag our kids out to the magistrates of the city and say, "Hey, look, this kid won't obey me. Let's take him to a rock concert." But God still expects that respect for those who have the proper authority and submission by those who were supposed to submit to that authority is still done. It says parents were to be the authority figures in the family, especially the father. And that hasn't changed, has it? And I think the world at large has the wrong idea, you know, when we talk about the man being the head of the house. Immediately, sometimes their minds go to thoughts of tyranny and dictatorship and some guy who just wants to keep the family under his thumb. And that's the furthest thing from what God intends. God intends, I believe, even in this Old Testament time for men to have a healthy respect for Him, and that would guide their family relationships. It says, when we go on in that paragraph on page 26, it says, so when parents fulfilled their roles, the next generation could fulfill theirs by offering respect to their parents, thus fulfilling God's purpose. See, this was supposed to be a generational thing, right? And that's why I think that this prolonging your days on the land goes two ways. One, what Jason was talking about, how, okay, if you disobey, we're gonna, but if you do obey, then your days will be prolonged. Your days will, you'll have a family. I can't help but think of Psalm 128. We're not gonna go there. We don't have that kind of time, but Psalm 128 talks about a guy who's got his wife and his children all around him like olive plants, a really idyllic setting, right? That's what God intended, right? For the family to be, this refuge from everything else that was going on out in the world. And so, when that worked right, and those children grew up, understanding authority, understanding their place later as parents, and teaching that to their children, and then their children growing up and understanding that, and then teaching their children. It goes on and on and on and on, right? I shared with you before, somebody told me, you find out what kind of parent you've been when you see how your grandchildren are growing up, right? And I guess what that means is that, you get to find out if what you tried to teach your children took. Because if it did, they're going to try and teach that to their children, right? And on and on and on. Go back to page 25. Page 25. Busting authority has always been a big deal with God, no matter what that authority might be. And I don't know why authority is such a dirty word for some folks. You know, it's the basis of how God deals with us. But I don't know how often it was practiced in ancient Israel. I haven't really found any places that give us the example, but can you imagine it as a deterrent? Can you imagine if a family took their child, knowing that we can't deal with this anymore? We're done with this kid. He is absolutely beyond redemption. And the worst happens. He is stoned. Can you imagine his friends watching that happen? You know, I think there's some deterrent value there. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Cheryl. Right, if you can't respect your father on earth, how will you respect your father in heaven? Look at the opportunities that they had here on page 25, about halfway down. This is that they have the opportunity for holiness. And this is always tied in with God. Look over at Leviticus chapter 19. We want to see how this was worked out among the Old Testament people of God before we start looking at the commandment today and what this means for us. But in Leviticus 19, there's a famous phrase there that appears in one of the letters of Peter. In Leviticus 19, let's look at verse 1. It says, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to all the congregation of the sons of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And every one of you shall reverence his mother and father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am Yahweh your God. So God ties this holiness with understanding what honor for father and mother is, right? Now that's not all that holiness is, but it's part of it. And it's interesting how God ties these things in together based on right relationship with Him, right? If we understand the holiness and the sacredness, the separateness, all those things that holiness means of God, then they're going to recognize their own responsibility to be different than all the other nations around it. And it starts at home. Holiness begins at home. You agree? Holiness begins at home because mom and dad get to be that child's first teacher about what holiness is. They had, of course, the opportunity for obedience. And there were lots of practical ways in which in which children could show honor to parents, but I don't think it gets any more respectful for authority than simply to do what authority says. There's a great example of this in the book of Jeremiah. Go there with me. Jeremiah 35. Of course, you know that the prophets are all about getting after the people for being disobedient to God. Jeremiah is no different. In fact, they would come to him and ask him, you know, just tell us what God wants and we'll do it. So Jeremiah would tell them, well, this is what God wants. And, well, we can't do that. And it was all about respecting God's authority, about respecting the fact that God had the absolute right to rule in every aspect of their lives. Look with me in Jeremiah 35. At the beginning it says, the word which came to Jeremiah from Yahweh in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go to the house of the Rechabites and speak to them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. And so Jeremiah says, well, then I took Jaazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, son of Habazaniah, and his brothers, and all his sons, and the whole house of the Rechabites. Now go down to verse 5. He says, then I set before the men of the house of the Rechabites pitchers full of wine and cups, and I said to them, drink wine. And they said, we will not drink wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, you shall not drink wine, you or your sons, forever. Then he gives them a bunch of other instructions about how they're to live as his family. You shall not build a house. You shall not sow seed, and you shall not plant a vineyard or own one. But in tents you shall dwell all your days, that you may live many days in the land where you sojourn. So we have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he commanded us, not to drink wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, or our daughters. Okay, so you have Jonadab, the family patriarch, right, who's obeying a predecessor, patriarch, Rechab. Now, Rechab is dead, right? But he's the one who said, this is how I want my descendants to live. This is what I want them to do, and this is what I don't want them to do. Jonadab understood that. And so he told his sons what dad, Rechab, expected from them. And the sons got it, right? So we don't live in houses. We're nomads. We don't drink wine because we're obeying the voice of our ancient father. Now look at verse 12. Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, go and say to the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, will you not receive instruction by listening to my words, declares the Lord? The words of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, which he commanded his sons not to drink wine, are observed. So they do not drink wine to this day, for they have obeyed their father's command. But I've spoken to you again and again, and yet you've not listened to me. What a great example that is of parental authority and how it was received. I mean, think about it. The patriarch was saying, we're going to be different than everybody else. We're not going to live in houses. We're not going to drink wine. We're going to be different. And it was a generational thing, and it continued. But what God saw in that was not the I don't know how weird those commands were to people of Jeremiah's day, but what God sees is how willing they were to submit to parental authority. And for God, you know, it's like what Cheryl said before, you know, if you don't respect your parents on earth, how are you going to respect your parent in heaven, right? What a great example it is. And that brings us to finally one more thing, is that it was the opportunity to know how to receive instruction, right? Obedience indicates that you're going to be open to what someone else tells you, right? That you're going to understand, okay, there's somebody who has the right to tell me what to do. That's authority. And I'm going to be open to that instruction. And we see it again and again. Look at the book of Proverbs. One of the things I like about the opening chapters of Proverbs is how the proverb writer just keeps reminding his son that, hey, this is for you and for your instruction. Look at chapter 1 and verse 8. Somebody read verses 8 and 9, Proverbs 1. Okay, so listen to what me and mom are telling you. What does it mean that there'll be a graceful, my version says, a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck? What does that mean? It'll be what? Okay, wisdom and strength. Man, I wish I'd have thought of that. That's good. But picture how he's talking about it. You'll have this, you know, he's talking about it as if it's some kind of adornment, right? This wreath on your head and these ornaments around your neck or chains around your neck, you know. And of course, it's not adorning your body, it's adorning your life, right? I mean, don't you agree that people who understand what it is to be humble enough to receive instruction, they're better people, they're more well-balanced, they're easier to deal with, you know. They have usually better lives because they're not always in friction, right? He tells us, the proverb writer says over in chapter 2, my son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, then make your ear attentive to wisdom. Incline your heart to understanding. In chapter 3, verse 1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. Chapter 4, verse 1, hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. In verse 10 of the same chapter, hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. Man, that sounds like the commandment we're talking about tonight, right? In chapter 5 and verse 1, my son, give attention to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding that you may observe discretion and your lips may reserve knowledge. Just on and on and on and on and on and on it goes. But that means something. If the child or the son or daughter has the opportunity to receive instruction, then that means that parents have the responsibility to give instruction. Right? Is that always fun? Is it always pleasant? Do kids always do what you tell them to do? We're not going to turn there, but in Deuteronomy chapter 6, in that famous passage that Moses told the people, he reminded them that whether you're, when you rise up or when you walk in the way or in the evening, any time is a good time to tell your child about the commands of God, right? Every moment is a teachable moment. You know, sometimes I don't know what it was like for them, but sometimes we wait for certain moments where things will be just right to say something significant that's needed to be said to our children, and that moment never comes, right? I think what Moses is saying in Deuteronomy 6 is take any moment and make sure that you're doing what a parent ought to do. Teach them. In fact, let's go ahead and go to Deuteronomy 6. What I was referring to you was verses 6 through 9, but what I want us to read is 20 through 25. Deuteronomy 6, 20 through 25. Who's got that? Thank you. We're talking about honoring mother and father, right? But mother and father need to be worthy of honor, right? They need to be people who understand the serious position that God has placed them in. I mean, I don't think there's any position that's more serious and takes more effort and more sober thinking than raising a child. And here God is saying, you know, everything you do can be an opportunity for a child to say, why does our family do this? Well, why are we like this? And basically the answer is because we're God's people. That's why we do this. Obviously, it's going to be something that's different than what everyone else does. But man, if there's one thing I think that God wanted to teach, wanted the parents of His people to teach their children, is the fact that they were God's people. And when God presents Himself to us in a way, even in the way, the miraculous way that He did in leading them out of Egypt, right? You see that language a lot. I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, right? They weren't supposed to forget that. But everything was supposed to be a reminder to them that we're not like everybody else. We're God's people. And because of that, God necessarily demands and deserves, the things that He requires from us. So we're going to do that. And I love the way that Moses says, this is how you can respond to that. Because it wasn't, do as I say and you won't get hurt, right? It was, this is why. This is why we do what we do. And that's important, I think, especially now. Because New Testament Christians are different than most other people. Even most other religious people, right? I mean, we do some things and we don't do some things that just seem strange to the rest of the world, even the rest of the religious world. So we've got to be ready in a way that fits their aptitude to explain to them why we do what we do, why we won't do what we won't do, and who's at the bottom or at the top of all of it. Go over for a minute to page 26. Underneath that third paragraph, underneath the one that we read just a little while ago, it says, the commandment laid down a parental, a social responsibility. We saw Deuteronomy 21. Parental disobedience became a societal problem, right? And so what happened when you got this son that you are at the end of your rope with, and you come and you bring him to who? The elders, right, of the city. You bring him to the elders and they say, the son is just off the, he's over the edge. We can't deal with him anymore. The community got involved. Who stoned him? The community did, right? The community carried out the sentence because failure to understand authority in honoring mother and father would later on become society's problem. And we see it today, don't we? I mean, I keep saying we're going to see what the commandment today means a little bit later on, but we can't help but make those applications, right? I mean, I think, is that the first one already? Well, we're not going to get done with this lesson tonight, but one of the things that we see today is a flagrant disrespect for authority, right? I mean, we see it all over. You can't help it, but, you know, when you're looking at the news, I look at a lot of news online. So there's all kinds of videos and there are people who are doing all kinds of crazy, stupid stuff. There's some kids who went into a museum with these priceless paintings and threw tomato soup at them because they're protesting environmentalism. There's another group of kids who went into a grocery store and started opening gallons of milk and dumping the milk out on the floor because they're protesting something else. Now, think about this. This is not just obstinance. This is a misunderstanding of authority. Because there are rules about how you conduct yourself in a grocery store. There are rules about how you conduct yourself in a museum, especially one that's got these priceless paintings on the wall that you're supposed to appreciate and not deface. There are rules, and who's supposed to be teaching young people about those rules? It's the parents, right? So I think we see people today, I think, who, young kids today, who don't have any respect for authority in any of the forms it takes, maybe because they never saw their parents have any respect for God's authority. So authority begins at home. Right? Holiness begins at home. Societal conduct begins at home. And guess who gets to be the teachers of that? The parents do, right? Let's finish reading that paragraph. It says that when they knew that parental disobedience would become a societal problem, so the community came together to correct it. The thought may have been, if a child fails to respect his own parents, would they necessarily have respect for anyone else's property or life? Respect for the older generation was necessary, and to be given that throughout their lives. So let's look at this last passage, and it will be the last one that we look at this evening. Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19, verse 32. Who's got that? Okay. God says, respect your elders. How many times have you heard that growing up? I heard it all the time. Respect your elders. Respect your elders. Well, what does that mean? Well, God said it here. You know, those who were older got that way by understanding what it takes to mature, not just physically, but there's a maturity, a wisdom about them. And I can't help but think that probably a lot of that they gleaned from their elders. And they got that from the elders before them. And then notice how at the end of the verse, he ties it to himself. You know, respect the older folks. I am the Lord. Right? Everything comes back. Everything comes back to honoring God. Comments, questions? We're going to take the second half of this lesson next week. We're going to talk about how this commandment is fulfilled today because it is repeated in the New Testament. So we'll take a look at that next week. Thank you.